This is Kelly Lyle with the Fort Collins, Colorado, and your CSU Insider on the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
The next time you get angry over a bad play, remember you need teamwork to win, not arguments.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Hey, hey, what do you say? We all had a special day. Now turn to a friend and say what you learned today.
Well, what we learned is, you know, as hot as the Nuggets were in that Lakers series, sweeping the series, they can still lose. And Miami got here for a reason. They can still win. So the bummer of it was you were up 15 at one point. I think they were up 8 to start the fourth. It was a terrible fourth period. It was a terrible start to the game for the Nuggets. They got to find a way to rebound. The fact that we're talking about effort is a little terrifying, as Michael Malone said. Angel, what'd you learn today?
I learned to take a breath. Get some perspective, sleep on it again, be ready for Wednesday.
Sleep on it again.
Nuggets are going to win. We're going to be fine. Keep on digging.
Got to win game three, because you don't want to get to that point where the pressure's all on game four. You win game three, at least you take home court advantage back. So that's the big one. I got to see Jamal. I'm going to put the pressure on Jamal Murray. I mean, this is your legacy you're talking about. This is, you know, you're asking the question, you know, what do I have to do to prove it to you guys that I am this good? I am that guy. Well, you are at times, and at times you're just a guy. And I know people hate that take of mine, but listen, I'm the biggest Jamal Murray promoter there is. I said that from the beginning of his career, that Jamal has the makings of being one of these great players in the NBA. So I put a stamp on that years ago. And now when I see him struggle, when I see him not play to the best of his ability, it bums me out in a big way. But I think he turns it up a notch in Miami coming up on Wednesday night. Looking forward to it. And we'll be back at it. We'll be back at it tomorrow to break into more of this, maybe some updates on all things Denver Broncos, all that and more. That'll do it for us. Good night, Northern Colorado. After the 1 o'clock hour, welcome back into the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We are on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFK. Joining me in studio, Adam Carriker, former NFL football player, drafted in the first round in 2007. That's amazing. I got a first rounder sitting in here with me, dude.
All I hear is 2007, and that's like 85 years ago in my mind. I'm only 39. It just makes me sound old, though, dude.
When did you retire? Was it about 10 years ago?
Oh, I'd have to go back and look officially. I think it was about 7-8 years ago.
Somewhere in there. But yeah. It's just crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, for an NFL football player, you bust your tail to get there. You work hard while you're playing. But then when you retire, you're still relatively a young man.
I know. It's crazy. I retired when I was 31.
Okay.
And one of the rookies in the Commanders, still weird for me to say, Commanders.
Yeah, because you, of course, played for St. Louis, played for Washington.
Yeah, D-line room. He called me old. I'm like, bro, I'm 31. This dude was like 21, you know, had just been drafted.
Oh, yeah.
But in his eyes, I was like a dinosaur in the football world. It was crazy.
Well, you do sports talk. You listen to sports talk. I mean, I get on here. I'm 36. I'm almost 37. And I talk about a 31-year-old, and I'm like, man, he's old. And I'm sitting there, and you just sound silly when you say that. But that sports just different.
That's just how, especially in football. It's such a, like, the average NFL career used to be 3 years when I first got in the league. Last time I heard a couple of years ago, it actually dropped to 2.7. So I actually took it as a compliment.
Yeah.
When younger guys started to call me old or a dinosaur or a fossil, your initial reaction is, What'd you say? But then after a while, it's like, that's a heck of a compliment.
I would never, to your face, I would never call you old.
Behind my back? Okay.
Now that I know you and I've seen you and you still look like you play in the NFL. Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of guys you see after they retire, they get maybe they get a little hefty or they go the opposite. They lose all the muscle. They stop lifting. You look like you could probably get out to camp today. So, jump down to OTAs real fast.
So you're absolutely right. Most guys I've seen, I've walked right by linemen, O-linemen, that I used to go against every day and not even known who they were a year later. Brett Byford, a guy who was 300-plus, I saw him a year later. He was running marathons, and he was under 200 pounds. I walked right by him. He goes, Adam. I'm like, what's up? He goes, it's Brett. I'm like, Brett who? He goes, Brett Byford. I like stared at him like, that's just one example. Wes Cody, who was a grade A J-hole, and I don't mean that in a kind way, but he was a senior when I was a freshman trying to put me in my place. It was another situation very similar. He turned into the nicest dude in the world. And then other guys, you know, they I've seen quarterbacks that look like they turned into linemen. So guys tend to go both ways. For me, I'll be honest, it's been up and down. I've had some hard things kind of come and go, different situations. So there was a year where I didn't work out, which is unheard of for me. And then I finally got into it last January, and I lost 30 pounds. So this Holy is the best cow, I've looked man. In like a year and a half, dude. So you caught me at the right time.
I walk out. I mean, I knew you were a football player. I knew you played for as long as you did. But, you know, I looked, it's like, dang, dude, you look like you just retired.
You caught me at the right time.
So the moving thing, is that still on the table? We've got some heavy things here.
I'll have my agent call you. Okay. We can discuss dollar figures.
You probably should be careful on that stuff. Talk to us about this camp. And again, first time meeting you in person. I know you and I are going to try to work on some stuff coming up this fall. Excited about that. But this camp, I love youth camps. We talked to Coach Smiley about his basketball camp, what they got going. When I saw this, I had reached out to you guys. I was like, man, we want to get Greg Minuski. We want to talk about this. This looks like a really awesome opportunity.
I'm very excited for it. So it's the Greg Minuski football camp. So for those who don't know who Greg Minuski is, he's a newly hired linebackers coach by the Broncos, by Sean Payton. He's also a 10-year NFL vet. Google the dude.
Yeah.
He looks like a psychopath from his playing days. And I mean that in a complimentary fashion. He was a linebacker. Linebackers should look a certain way, so to speak. You don't have to, but it's great if you do. But we've also got like a bunch of award-winning type guys. Green Bay Packers Hall of Famer Amon Green, Ralph Tam, former Bronco, 12-year NFL vet, you know, won a Super Bowl. We got some Division I type guys, couple All-Americans, national championship type winners. So we're excited for this year because it's the third year of the camp. It's my first year of being directly involved with putting it on. Josh Davis has done a phenomenal job. One of my former teammates played at Loveland High in Nebraska in the league for a little bit. His dad himself was a Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl MVP, Cincinnati Bengals team MVP, which is not talked about enough. So they were mainly putting it on, and I just kind of helped coach my station, hung out with the kids, went home. At the end of last year's camp, he's like, hey, Adam, you want to help me put it on? And so one of the things I wanted to do, I wanted to get more Broncos involved. And we've always had great guys there. But I was like, hey, let's get some guys, that like some award-winning type guys, and see if we can't get them. Let's swing for the fences. And we were able to connect on most of those.
Man, all these connections. And again, that's what speaks to these camps. What separates this camp is you guys have all this knowledge. You got guys still coaching in the league. Mm-hmm. You got guys that played at a high level, coached at a high level, that will be out there working with these guys. I mean, that's what separates you, this camp, from any of the other camps I'm seeing throughout the area.
So there's a lot of phenomenal camps in the area. Like I said, Josh has done a great job the past couple years. But we're still competitive type guys. I just got to the point where I could play Yahtzee with my kids without a fight erupting. And I'd like to say it was my kids throwing the fit, but it was me. It was me. I'll just be honest. I've improved. I've grown as a human being. But you're always trying to get better. And so I've never actually seen an active NFL coach help with a youth camp before. And I forget to even mention a guy like Dave McLaughlin, who won a national championship at CU.
Yeah.
A current NFL scout with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who's going to be there too. So we just got a lot of cool individuals. I don't know if we've mentioned the dates, but it's June 28th, 29th, Loveland Sports Park, the Turf Field.
Love that park, too. That's a great spot to do this. Where can folks go to get more information? They're listening right now. They want to talk about getting registered. Because I do think that that's an interesting point with Greg Minuski. Like, you don't, when I first saw it, I was like, a current coach has taken the time to come over and do that's amazing. So listeners right now looking at this, where do they go to get more information?
So alumnicap.com. So we're a nonprofit, so that's the nonprofit. So it's alumni, C-A-P, alumnicap.com. You can register. You can get more information there as well.
Okay. And I've got that pulled up, too, so I'll be sure to Mentioned that throughout the course of the month. But June 28th and 29th, man, it's right around the corner. Prime time to get those kids. Not prime time. Didn't mean it like that. Don't hurt me. Great opportunity to go out and get some football in this summer. Yep. I mean, I think camps are just so valuable. Some of my favorite memories of sports were the summer camps.
For sure.
Building there. You're personally, you know, learning how to deal with other people, too. I mean, there's so many great things. Not just the X's and O's, but so many great things you can take from camps.
I just love, because a lot of times what happens is I have six kids, okay, five of them in sports, three of them in competitive sports, multiple sports, football, basketball, baseball, volleyball, softball. By the way, we got to start narrowing that down, but I digress. For their sanity and mom and dad's as well, because we got youngers that are coming up now as we go along. But one of the things that happens is teams tend to stay together as much as possible, which is phenomenal. But then what happens is you tend to create a little bit of a bubble, and when the kids get older and when they leave the house one day, maybe they are or are not used to being around different people. And so for me, I've been all over the place. I've lived in every time zone. So for me, going somewhere new, meeting new people is nothing. It's something I've done a million times, but for someone else, it might not be quite that easy who hasn't done it. You go to a camp, you're around all these people you don't know.
Sure.
You're competing with and against people you don't know, and it's great. It's great. And I don't mean bubble in a negative sense, but it's great to get exposed to people outside your normal realm of those that you deal with on a day-in and day-out basis.
Yeah, and I went to so many camps and throughout the summer. As a youth, you go by yourself a lot. As you get into high school, you start going with your teams and things like that. But I can still tell you all these different coaches that made an impact on me or whatever going forward, because it's just part of the learning process.
For sure. I went to – so for me as a kid, baseball was actually really big until middle school. Then my dad wouldn't let me play tackle football until seventh grade. So I went to the – I don't know if anybody remember these guys, but Mel Stottlemyre, Jr., I think he pitched for the Yankees. He pitched for like 10, 15 years in the majors. Okay. He had a batting cage where we were, but he put on a camp every summer. I still remember that camp like it was yesterday. And I was like 9, 10, 11 at that point in time. Then I started going to basketball camps and football camps. But I still remember those things like it was yesterday. You know, and then our team camps, we always went to Oregon State every year, being in the Northwest. So I still remember those. And like I said, just competing with and against people that were completely different than I was used to seeing. And I felt like that was more fun, intriguing, and frankly made us better.
Well, this is an awesome opportunity to make kiddos better, learn more about football, learn from guys that did it at such a high level, guys that are currently doing it at such a high level. Maybe we can get Greg on at some point, too, and ask him.
So we are working on such things. So I will readily admit that that is kind of Josh's department. So, okay. Josh, I'm throwing your name out there. Pressure's on, my friend. But, yeah, the plan is to get some of these guys on with you all here at this great, wonderful station, doing
it,
some interviews, get the word out about the camp, and form a little bit of a relationship there.
Yeah, and we'll be sure to mention the camp throughout this month, too, to let folks know. I got to ask you. Do you know Sean Payton?
I do not know him. I've gone against him, so he probably knows who I am just from a scouting. This guy's really bad at this and this and this, and let's exploit this. He probably knows more about me and is more familiar with me than I am with him.
Well, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the way he's doing the OTA thing. It's very locked down. It reminds me of college football, because a lot of times college football, man, you can barely do anything. What I'm told is, you know, if you're out there, you can't really get on your shows. You can't write about certain topics unless it was addressed to him in the presser after the day and he actually acknowledges it. Is that unique? Or is that what you did? You go through stuff like that? Was it pretty buttoned down?
In my experience, I've seen all sorts of different kinds of coaches. I've seen some coaches that are just wide open. Those are becoming the minority, so to speak. It's becoming much more buttoned down as we go along. And honestly, that makes more sense to me. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of folks are not crazy about that because they want to know what's going on.
They want to know everything that's happening every single day.
Here's what I know. Whether he keeps it wide open or he buttons it down so you can't see or say anything, all that's going to matter is if he wins. If he wins, people are going to praise the way he does it. If he loses, they're going to indict the way he does it. At the end of the day, he's got to do what he feels is best to help his squad win, because at the end of the day, 99.9% of the time, that's really all that matters.
Well, and I remember last year with Nathaniel Hackett, he was like the opposite, right? He was one of those guys that opened up and he joked around, and we knew everything about this guy.
Is he still here?
No.
That's the question.
That was the thing in the preseason was, he's not playing any of his guys. He's this guy. He's open. If this works out, who knows? That might change. That might be a new trend coming in. But then it obviously was was a dumpster fire, and the Broncos were left searching for yet another head coach.
It all comes down to, again, 99.9% of the time, winning cures all. I'll point to Nick Saban, okay?
There you go, Angel. There's our Bama boy back there.
I'm not an Alabama fan, War Eagle. I'm not even an Auburn fan. I'm just going to say it to irk you. Sorry about that. We haven't even met yet. He's shaking his head through the glass.
Angel's probably like, you know, we're fine. You're good, man. You're good. We're okay.
So actually, there's a family that I know really, really well, and their daughter just committed to go to Alabama. So I've spoken like 10 words to her. Her brother has played on my football team. Jacob's played on her brother's name is America's baseball team for 5 years. And so I've hardly spoken to her, but every time I walk by her now, it's War Eagle. She goes, what's your deal, man? Just out of nowhere. I was like, that's my deal, just to have fun with you. But Nick Saban, okay, maybe the greatest college football coach of all time, debate for another day. What's not debatable is he's really, really good. And what also, if you watch his press conferences, he's not exactly the nicest guy in the world to the media.
Right,
you could say he's kind of a jerk at times.
You certainly could say that.
Does anybody say a word? Nope, because he wins.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick, you want to talk about button down. I mean, my goodness, but nobody says a word. You know, so to me, at the end of the day, if you win, if you lose, that's what people are ultimately going to talk about.
Well, hopefully they can find a way to do that. You guys want to be a winner, check out this this football camp at Loveland Sports Park. Adam, one more time, give us some information. Give us that website again. We know the dates, June 28th through 29th, grades K through 12.
Yes.
So an opportunity for kids of all ages to get out there. One more time, throw that website out for us.
Like you said, K through 12. And just to clarify, because sometimes older kids don't want to come if there's younger kids there, the kids are going to be divided up amongst their ages.
Sure.
They're going to compete with and against kids of their own age group. June 28th, 29th, Loveland Sports Park. Go to alumnicap.com. That's alumnicap.com to check out the info and or register.
All these amazing names, including Adam, and then you have a coach that's actually coaching in the NFL going to be out there.
Yep.
You want some expertise, have a blast, make some memories. This is going to be that time, that opportunity for you.
And we were talking about CSU players earlier. I actually just got confirmed last week. We're going to have 6 CSU starters out there. Okay.
Yeah, that's amazing to me.
Yeah, from 3 defensive starters to 3 offensive starters, and you're a little bit more familiar with them than I am at the moment, but their starting quarterback is coming
Clay
back.
Clay will be out there.
Yep, the wide receiver, Torrey.
Yep, Torrey Horton,
Torrey
Horton, here's a who.
A couple of quick examples, so it's going to be fun.
You're getting all my guys out there. I know Chiggy's coming out there. He's a heck of a guy.
Yep.
Just great players, and I know you have a relationship with Jay Norvell, too. So, dude, I am so pumped about this. I'm pumped for the camp, but obviously to get to know you a little bit more, and I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be fantastic. Talk football, pick your brain.
It's going to be a blast between us. It's going to be a blast for the camp. And here's the thing. For those who are wanting to learn, you know, from as high a level of people as you can, this is a great opportunity. But here's the other deal. These are just good dudes. They're good guys.
Yeah.
And so they're going to make it fun for the kids. So no matter what you're looking for, even if you're just looking to go out and have fun, this is a great opportunity for those kids as well.
I think that's one of the most important features that a camp can offer, right?
For sure.
Adam, my man, appreciate you so much. It's an honor to get you in studio and talk to you. And I know we'll be talking to you down the road very, very soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, man. 20 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour. What do the Nuggets need to do to make sure they can get Game 3 against the Miami Heat? What's the panic level look like for you guys right now? We'll take a short break. It's the whole show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Gary and Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Jeff Linder, head men's basketball coach of the University of Wyoming Cowboys, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
It is Monday. Got the Monday blues, Angel. After the Nuggets lost last night. You know what would cure the Monday blues? How about some all-you-can-eat spaghetti for $5.95 at Cable's Pub and Grill? That is my place, dude. That's my hangout. Absolutely love what they do there. The food is ridiculous. You came and hung out with us. I don't remember what you ate, but you...
I had the fried pickles.
Not bad, huh?
They were pretty good. Had them again yesterday.
Ridiculous, man. Cable's is a fantastic place. I'm telling you, though. Okay? I know you weren't, like, starving. You weren't there to eat, necessarily, when we went. Next time you're hungry and you're going somewhere for lunch or whatever, dinner, think about Fiesta Thursdays. You have to try that smothered burrito. I tried it for the first time, like, 3 weeks ago, and it is ridiculous. But today, Monday, all-you-can-eat spaghetti for just $5.95. Dude, Adam was awesome. Adam Carriker. What a great dude. Played in the league from, 2007 to 2000-something, 2013, 2014. He played a while, man. And he played for St. Louis for a couple seasons. He played for Washington for a couple of seasons. Heck of a player. Heck of a guy. He was a Nebraska guy. And we're going to be doing some stuff with him, I believe, coming up this fall when it comes to talking football. That football camp is really a great thing. Greg Minuski, man. I mean, he's the linebackers coach for the Broncos. And he's taking time to come up here and put this on with all these big names. Like Adam, we talked about. Amon Green, some big-time football players. And then local guys are going to be in the mix, too. Some CSU players. I know Clay's going to be out there. And Torrey Horton and, Chiggy. You know, there's going to be some studs out there. So this is a great opportunity to get your kiddos out, K through 12, get them into some football action this summer. Did you hear this one? Kyrie Irving has reached out to Lakers star LeBron James in attempts to see if James would come to Dallas. Irving is a free agent this offseason. Can we do that? Is that legal? How is that not tampering? I mean, I know he's a free agent. He's going to be a free agent, but that seems a little strange to me. Can you imagine LeBron James with Luka and Kyrie Irving? There's not enough basketballs. There's barely enough with Luka and Kyrie.
Could they keep all three of them? I don't think L.A. would willingly just give up LeBron James.
Do you want Luka? Do you get Luka then? Do you trade? There's no way. If you're Dallas, I think, does Dallas know that this isn't going to work with Kyrie and Luka? Or are they still trying to make a move for Kyrie to try to keep him on with Dallas? I mean,
it seems like they're leaning more towards we want Kyrie over Luka. Which is strange.
Okay, so then do they say, all right, you want Luka? We'll get you, if you're Dallas, you want Luka, give us LeBron, give us Anthony Davis. Because are you trading Luka straight up for LeBron? There's no way. LeBron's done in a year, so you got to get real value if you're Dallas.
LeBron and, was it Reeves? Shooter, you're not going to get AD and LeBron.
Really?
See, if LA could pair up Luka and AD, I think they would take it. But they're going to have to give up LeBron and Rui.
There's nobody valuable there other than LeBron and AD. Now
there was no valuable players there before, and they got all these players.
I don't know. I bet they're not worth Luka. Luka is. You got to give me an equivalent superstar to Luka. And when I say equivalent, it's not just skill set. If LeBron James was 29 as opposed to, what is he, 30? Is he 38? Then, yeah, there's equivalency there because he's still young. He's still got several years. What's LeBron got? Maybe two years? So if I'm Dallas, and I feel like you're right, Angel, they are leaning in on the Kyrie thing over Luka. Which
I say that, but it could also be Kyrie is kind of just taking this on himself.
So
like,
dumb.
This is my team either way. Like, they traded to get me, so this is my team. It's weird, Kyrie spent years trying to get out from under LeBron's shadow.
That's what
and
I don't
now he's
think,
going right back to him.
They don't like each other, then they liked each other, then they don't like each other, now they kind of like each other. I don't know. It's a weird situation. But I'm just looking at it going, all right, if Kyrie's the big man on campus and he's the one they want, then they're going to say, oh, you don't want to play with Luka anymore? No, not really. I guess not. Then I want to play with LeBron. How are you going to get LeBron here?
There's a crazy three-way trade. Luka mm-hmm. to Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Denver sends Gordon and...
MPJ
to Los Angeles, and then LeBron goes to Dallas.
How? What does Dallas get? Oh,
Dallas would have Kyrie, LeBron.
Yeah.
Lakers would have AD, Aaron Gordon, and MPJ.
Ah,
and then
I
the Nuggets
where,
would
I see
have
where you're going.
Murray, Jokic, and Luka.
But Jamal would probably have to be in that thing. If you're getting Luka,
I don't care at that point.
See, I think I would rather have Luka, Joker with MPJ. Because I don't think Luka and Joker... Could Luka and Jamal...
Can Luka handle the ball as much?
Yeah. Yeah, he would... it'd be you'd have the dual point guards. What are we talking about? Yeah, that would be interesting. Well, let me ask you right now. The Nuggets still have the rest of this series to go. It's tied 1-1. Has Jamal earned your trust? I said this at the start of the show. I don't trust Jamal still. I value him. I love him. I still think he, at his best, is one of the best players in the league. But he's so inconsistent. Do you trust him?
No, not entirely. Because there are shots that he takes. There was one shot last night in the first half where I call it a Damian Lillard three, when it's just like 2-3 feet off the line.
Yep.
And it's just outside of range. That type of shot, to take that, to just walk into that shot and just take it, takes a level of confidence and trust in yourself and your team that I don't think Jamal is there. If he shoots it and makes it, awesome.
Yeah.
Great. But when he shoots it like that and misses, it's like, Jamal, that's not the shot.
These playoffs, again, you can set your watch by this. Go back and look at the bubble. Take the bubble stats. Put them right next to the stats in these playoffs. They're very similar. He's had many games where he just lit the world on. Has he had any 50-point games in these playoffs? I don't know yet. Might not have reached that high of a ceiling, but he certainly had monster games. But the problem is he's not going to do it every night. Joker has done it every single night in these playoffs. Devin Booker did it every single night for the Suns in the playoffs.
So here's Jamal's points all the series. 24, 40, 18, 19, 35 against Minnesota. Phoenix was 34, 10, mm-hmm. 32, 28, 19, 26. Lakers, 31, 37, 37, 25.
Well, it felt like he was there, right? After the Lakers.
Right.
My guy Smitty, if you're out there, he was the one who's very critical about Jamal. I saw you on Twitter. He came out on Twitter and he was like, you know, a lot of people were saying this. I was wrong about Jamal. And I'm gonna do this right now. I love Jamal. I believe in Jamal sometimes. I'm gonna tell you, Smitty, you weren't necessarily wrong.
Well, we talked in the Minnesota series how Jamal was very up and down. He was up and down in that series, and he had six games from game six against Phoenix through the Lakers and then game one. He had incredible games right there. And now he dropped down a bit more. So it's going to jump up a bit more. It's like stocks.
Yeah.
Just be careful where you're buying.
This is the weird thing about this Nuggets team, is you just don't necessarily know where it's going to come from. And that's all well and good for a bedtime story and, you know, all this stuff.
It's good when everyone's hitting. Everyone's a team. When no one's hitting.
When no one's hitting except for the Joker. And they say, well, you can't win when Joker's the only guy. Well, that's because on any given night, you don't know who the other guy is going to be. And that is both a blessing and a curse for the Nuggets. Win a title, great. Can you sustain this for 5 years and be a dynasty? The question will still be to Jamal Murray. Can you be consistent? Otherwise, win or don't win, Calvin Booth is going to be looking at how do we be a dynasty? How do we win multiple titles and take advantage of the Nikola Jokic window? Steve Kerr can say Jamal's the head of the snake all he wants. Nikola Jokic is your unicorn. He is the guy that you are trying to say, hey, we don't want to be the management team that was responsible for not taking advantage of one of the greatest players of all time. I do believe it's going to happen someday, taking advantage of that window. So I think the rest of the playoffs here, the rest of the finals, continue to be a monster test for Jamal Murray. No doubt about it. For his future, I know he's got the contract. He's already signed up. But for the way we perceive Jamal, this again is yet another test for him. Holyoke texting in, checking in now. Don't know where you stand with MPJ, but how much did Christian Brown impact reflect Porter's minutes and productivity? Yeah, it did. Bruce Brown and Christian Brown, the Browns, continue to eat into MPJ's minutes, which I'm going to say this again. It's both a blessing and a curse. When Christian Brown comes out there and outlasts his minutes, that is a great thing because that means you have a rookie player that's busting his hump and he's earning that. Any minute he gets is earned. That's awesome. But every minute he plays is eating into Michael Porter Jr.'s time, both mentally and physically. And when he sits there and pouts, probably does, when he comes out to play, he's completely out of rhythm. And I felt this way for a while now, that Michael Malone, as good of a coach as I think he is, and maybe becoming a great coach, he doesn't know how to handle Michael Porter Jr. He doesn't know how to handle that skill set, both mentally and physically.
Can you play them both?
Well, that's what I was hoping, was that last night you want to keep giving minutes to Christian Brown. Great. Let's put Michael Porter Jr. out on the floor at the same time. But then it became, no, we want Bruce Brown and Christian Brown to hold down the fort. Bruce is continuing to eat minutes from MPJ,
that's
too.
That's fine, but if you put Bruce and MPJ out there, that's two shooters. Christian's not going to threaten you with a shot. And you can use him just as a screener, just to set screens for MPJ. I get that with the eating in his minutes and stuff, and how does that affect him mentally? We've heard from Michael that he's very, you know, team first, that, hey, if I need to sit on the bench,
well, we've
I'm
heard,
fine with
and
that.
We kind of thought that that was the thing, and maybe it still is.
I mean, it's easy to look at one instance in a game, too, where you lost and say, oh, this is what went wrong. That's what went wrong. Oh, Michael's pouting because of that, when he could have been pouting over anything else.
Somebody was pouting, though. We know that. You know, Michael Malone said we were feeling sorry for ourselves when we were missing shots. Well, that either has to be MPJ or KCP from that. Because Mike, you could not get Malone to say anything negative about Jamal or Nikola. I think he's more likely to say something about Nikola than he is Jamal. He loves Jamal. Every coach in the history of the NBA has a guy. George Karl had Andre Miller. Malone had Jameer Nelson for a moment and then fell in love with Jamal. Jamal is his guy through thick and thin. They won't ever trade him. So this whole fun conversation about the Luka thing, unless Calvin Booth puts his foot down. Because we do know Conley inquired about trading him a few years ago, and Malone was like, no way, you're our guy.
What if he plays his way into a trade? Where it's, we have to trade him. Before he loses any more value.
I'm telling you, Angel, I said at the beginning, and I'm going to say the reverse of it, but it's the same meaning. If they lose the finals, it will be on Jamal Murray's shoulders. Because that ain't going to be Nikola Jokic that fails. And if you're Calvin Booth, you're probably not going to put the blame on Michael Malone. Jamal Murray is your second star. He's got to play. He wants the respect, and he says, why do I have to keep telling you? Because you're just telling us. We need to see it every night. In order for you to be the superstar that you think you are, he compared himself to Kobe. He did. He compared himself to Kobe. And I completely agree that on his best nights, he does look like Kobe. He plays a lot like Kobe on his best nights. The problem is, he doesn't have his best nights every night. Noob says MPJ is just the easy target because he has done it in the past. It could have been anyone. It wasn't Joker. It wasn't Jamal. I mean, dude, we're running out of bodies here. They only go three deep off the bench. It wasn't Christian Brown. It wasn't Bruce Brown, was it? He missed a lot of shots, though, but I don't think it was Bruce Brown. Doesn't speak to his character, does it? Sit and pout?
No, but when you look at the box score, you can pick out the two players that didn't show up on the starting lineup. KCP, yeah. You don't expect him to go off for 20 points a night, but you expect him to get at least 10, couple three-pointers, just to, you know, say that he's still there. MPJ, he's struggled in the first two games of the series. There's no doubt. He didn't shoot great in Game 1. He didn't shoot well in Game 2. That is a hurdle he's going to have to get himself over before Game 3, because you're going to need his shots to start falling.
Yeah, no question about it. You've got to have him. You've got to have both of those guys rolling, but I do think Michael Porter Jr. is a product of himself. Like, if he hits the first bucket early, he starts to feel it. He can get into a quick rhythm. I don't when you say MPJ is just the easy target, I'm not really saying he's the reason they lost or he's the target. They couldn't defend the 3-point line. I mean, as a team, they couldn't defend last night. So that there's just when you lose a game, there's a lot of reasons for it. Should Malone have called a timeout down the stretch? He had two in his pocket when the game ended.
I think we're having a different conversation if the Nuggets lost by 5 or 10 points. They lost by 3 with a shot at the end to tie the game.
Yeah.
If they go into overtime, Denver wins.
Oh, I felt like they might. I felt that then that shot, we can argue all day.
It was
like,
in. Like it, the shot
it,
was in.
It rolled out. I didn't think it was a good shot when people said, oh, no, he had the look he wanted. That's not the look you want. You want to be more open.
I brought it up this morning on the show about the timeout thing. You remember the last time the Nuggets had a big pressure inbound play and they couldn't do it?
It's true. We'd all be freaking out at that point. I was
George Karl even said, no, don't call
no,
a timeout.
Don't call a timeout. We're not inbounding this thing. Where's Kenyon Martin? Where's Anthony Carter? I don't have an issue with not calling the timeout. It just the response that I got on Twitter was like, well, yeah, you didn't need to call a timeout. You actually got the look that you wanted. Yeah, I would have liked to see Jamal
well, the
a little more open.
The discussion would be totally different if they called a timeout and that same thing happened.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how did you drop a play then like you that? Looked, you wasted a timeout. You should have just did it.
Because Jamal ended up just dribbling down and he went behind the back and he, you know, and then he ended up having to fire it up. It was a good looking shot. It wasn't the best shot selection or the best option. At the time, it was your only option because you didn't have any more time. He had to take the shot. But if you're telling me that was the way they drew that up, I don't think so. That was Jamal just running down and trying to make something crazy. I thought it might go in, though. And I'm with you. They would have won in overtime. All right, Wednesday. Let's get to Wednesday. 43 minutes after the hour, let's jump out and get the latest on the local Sports Flash.
Hi, this is Jesse Kurtz, executive producer and lead anchor of the Mountain West Network. And you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into The Whole Show, powered by PDC Energy. Our tight-knit brewing poll question of the day. What's your panic level situation right now after the Nuggets dropped Game 2? You know, it's the finals. This is how these things go, man. I mean, they're great teams that are resilient. You can say what you want about Miami being an underdog all year. You know what the playoffs have taught them? They've taught them how to be tougher, how to be resilient, how to not shy away from the challenge. And they didn't. Every time someone writes them off, they bounce back. So, crucial game coming up, Game 3 on Wednesday. This thing, dude, if it goes 7, is it going to be like July? I mean, why are we going so many days in between? When did they play last? They played Thursday?
Thursday.
And then we had to go Friday, Saturday with no games. And then they played last night. Now we're going to go Monday, Tuesday. I just wish they would play tomorrow. That would be fantastic. Why not just go every other night?
I think with the difference in altitude and obviously the travel, you have to give these times guys to adjust. It's not just adjusting to the altitude. It's our guys adjusting to the humidity and the lack of elevation in South Beach.
But they do this stuff all year. They're here one night. They're here the next. Ah, yeah, it's fine. I'm ready. Let's see what they do. Any concerns? You think they win Game 3?
I mean, I'm just concerned. Like I want to see them start off better than they did Game 2. You always say you get the sense of a game early. I got the sense early last night that this team wasn't focused. It felt very reminiscent of that Houston game back in March where they just you could tell they their heads weren't in it. And if I was a coach, you know, in that position, I'd be frustrated too. I'd be disappointed. You know, what else do I need to do to get you guys to focus that this is the finals? You don't get to just lack off on defense for a quarter or a half.
They were completely out of sorts on the defensive side of the ball, and we all know defense at the NBA at the NBA level is effort. Because these guys can play defense.
Has constantly shown you they when they need to turn it on or when they need to do it, they can do it and they can do it well. You just can't dig yourself a hole so early.
Yeah, and mentally that you start seeing that, oh, Miami can beat you if they play well and you struggle. That's a mental thing that creeps in throughout the course of the game, that they are capable of going on a run.
How well did Miami have to play last night?
Yeah, they played pretty good. I mean, Jimmy Butler, I still don't think we've seen his best game. We haven't seen his – when he's on, he's on. We haven't seen that yet. Maybe we won't with his personal stuff and his injury. 49 minutes after the hour, what did we learn today? Coming up next, it's the whole show powered by PDC Energy.
Preps Rewind. Saturday mornings at 10 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.